Coming up in this episode.
For a very small price of a £17,500 salary and a 1.6 GLX Escort, they persuaded me to come down to North Wales and run one of the depots for TDG Williams, and that's where it all started, frankly.
The Logistics Collective podcast is a series focused on the logistics industry, where there are many incredible stories to be told. We'll be speaking with those who've worked and are working within the industry today. What have been their experiences, good and bad, since joining, and would they recommend a career in the industry to others? Here's your host, Malcolm Pope.
Hi there, and welcome to the next edition of Logistics Collective, the podcast. And here with me today, I could maybe suggest he might be into astronomy. He's certainly interested in Ursa Major. I have Alistair Isbister, who's the Chief Executive Officer of Great Bear Distribution. Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, Malcolm. Very well indeed, thank you.
So where does today find you and how are you?
Well, Malcolm, I'm actually unusually working from home. I never work from home, but I'm not allowed to drive because I've just had a surgery on my shoulder and elbows from a football injury, which at my age is clearly something I shouldn't be doing. So I'm on the mend.
We all live and learn, and obviously I wish you a really good recovery.
Thank you.
Could you tell us a little bit more about what you do?
Okay, well, I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Great Bear Distribution Limited, and more accurately. I basically run that business. I don't own that business. It's part of the Kalina family, and you know, my job is to ensure that we deliver the service we promise our customers, and we actually create the profitability for our shareholder, our sole shareholder, to ensure he continues to invest in our business, which thus far we've been reasonably successful at doing.
Now, prior to Great Bear, I've looked at your career of stars and highlights, and you know, I see DHL in there, Trade Team, XL Logistics, TDG, and also UCI. So you've had a long career in the industry. What does working in this industry mean to you?
I think first and foremost, I find it a fascinating industry. It's forever changing. I think it's changed immeasurably in the time I've been in it. As you can see from that list, actually there's probably only three companies I've worked for, although I've done very many jobs in them of note. And I think, you know, why do I do it? I just find the people great to work with. It always enthuses me. Feel passionate about what we do. I have to say, I think we operate in an industry where hard work trumps being a genius. You know, I think good, hard, solid hard work ethic, you can do a really good job and you can work with people who are like-minded and get some really great results out of it and get a lot of personal satisfaction and create good outcomes for our customers. And I think that's as simple as that, really.
So a long and successful career in the logistics industry. But I'm looking at Alistair in his youth. I'm going back a short while in the time machine. I'm just wondering when you were back in the day, what was your dream job?
Oh, blimey! It probably was being a professional footballer, if I'm really honest. But I was never good enough to do that. Nowhere near it. That was a dream. My father was an engineer actually, and I never thought about what I was going to do until probably I was having to decide if I was going to go to university or not. And I just decided I would do, and I would follow my dad and become an engineer. So I was a mechanical engineer. And I found it pretty difficult, if I'm honest. I got through it. I found it challenging. And I then worked in engineering for a couple of years afterwards. But in reality, it was challenging but not fulfilling for me. I don't think I was bright enough, if I'm honest. And, you know, I had to do something different. So I definitely didn't have a clear idea that I wanted to end up in logistics, although I'm very glad I did.
So how did you get into logistics and what was your first role?
Well, that's a good question, I suppose. Well, actually what happened was, so my mum, I always remember my mum knew I was a bit unhappy in engineering. And I walked into the kitchen one day and she said, oh, there's a job that you should look at there. And basically it was a job advert to work for TDG. And basically the deal was, if you want to come and work for us, we're looking for graduates who have been a couple of years out of university, they've got some life experience. We're looking for our future management talent. And What we're going to offer you is the opportunity to do some projects and pitch them to our more senior management, so people at my sort of level, frankly. And what we'll do is after a couple of years, we'll decide, and you can decide whether or not you want to continue to work with us. But in the meantime, we'll pay for you to do an MBA. So effectively, they created a conversion course from a technical discipline for me into a business discipline. And at the same time, I got the opportunity to do various projects within, at that point, there was a company called Tommy Smith Jr., who were a haulier in the whiskey industry. And they wanted to modernize it, and they gave me various projects, and I had to do that. And at the end of the 2 years, I'd decided that, well, actually, it wasn't that exciting, this logistics business, and I was going to go off traveling with my friends to Spain. And in fact, we bought the ticket to Spain, to Australia. And we'd bought the tickets and everything. And the day came, I had to go and talk to the chief exec of TDG, Cairn Gorm at the time, a guy called Duncan Martin. And I said, listen, I think I'm just going to bail out here and off we go. And we'll go our separate ways. And he said, well, no, you've done terribly well in your MBA. We don't want you to leave. And he introduced me to a guy called David Williams, who many of you might know. And basically, for a very small price of £17,500 salary and a 1.6 GLX Escort, they persuaded me to come down to North Wales and run one of the depots for TDG Williams. And that's where it all started, frankly. And I basically became an operator and, you know, ended up over the years getting various depots and more depots, etc. And of course, the ultimate irony in all that is that David Williams, who was really the reason why I came out of Scotland and stayed in logistics, was by pure chance the he was the owner of and creator of Great Bear. So I've actually gone full circle. But actually, I never worked for David. When I only joined Kalina and Great Bear once Kalina had bought Great Bear and David was no longer with the business. So it's funny, really, isn't it?
I remember David and meeting him, and a really sound and good man. And yeah. But there you go. Look, I'm so impressed they gave you a GLX and not just an LX. I mean, heaven's sake. After all of this, I'm going to Australia when you're all happy with whiskey galore, and you know, yeah, an Escort GLX swings it for you. But hey,
I took a lot of stick off my friends for that, I've got to say, but it was a good decision. But it all started by my mum. And I have to tell you, I found my MBA an absolute doddle in comparison to mechanical engineering.
My background is chemistry. So I've got to say, I find business a huge amount more interesting than I did chemistry. Anyway, least said, soonest mended. What's your best time of day to work in?
Oh, morning. Definitely morning. And early morning, actually. I try to do meetings, if I can, 2 o'clock onwards, or catch up to 2 o'clock onwards, but certainly I would say, eight till 11:30 are definitely my best times. Maybe even earlier, actually, in truth, probably 7, but definitely in the morning, definitely a morning person.
So if I'm ever running another tender and inviting Great Bear in, and I have the good fortune of dragging you in, you're in the afternoon. I'm sorry about that. I'm never good. But there we go. What's been your best career experience so far?
There's been a few, actually. I enjoyed the trade team turnaround way back in the mid-2000s. That was good in particular. But I really enjoyed my early career when I was basically doing lots of different things and they were all new to me. I genuinely think the last 5 years that I've been in Great Bear, that's probably been the best decision I've made, because I spent a lot of time in DHL, which I thoroughly enjoyed, actually. I wouldn't have a word said against DHL, but I think I needed to get back to my more entrepreneurial, less bureaucratic, less massive business roots, which really is what TDG taught me. TDG taught me how to run medium-sized businesses, actually, and typically closed books. So, I would say joining Great Bear, and the story behind that was nothing more than Thomas van Marwijk had been asking me or trying to encourage me to join Kalina Group for 2 or 3 years prior to Great Bear, prior to them buying Great Bear. And I'd said no up to that point. And then he rang me one day. I was in an airport, actually, in Belfast, Dublin, actually. And he said, listen, I've bought Great Bear. And would you like to come and be the chief exec? And there and then I just said, yeah. So that was it. Simple as that.
That's brilliant. It's interesting you mentioned Trade Team. Recently, I interviewed Malcolm Harrison, the chief executive of SIPS. And obviously, he's got a history in terms of Trade Team. He was probably the initiator from his perspective. So small world syndrome strikes again.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting that Trade Team was such a success. It had many fathers. And over the years, I've met many of them. And it's that industry is in a very challenging times, frankly. And I think I was fortunate enough to be involved at a time that it could be sorted. I think it's still challenged as an industry. So,
do you think there's any industry sector that isn't challenged at the moment?
Probably not. No, I think I'm not sure it's recoverable. The current way in which booze is delivered to pubs in a market that is just in such terrible decline. Very, very difficult, actually. And there's some legislative challenges to that as well, of course. But hey, I'm not involved in it. I just see it from afar. And I think I'm grateful not to be having to do what we did in 2005 all over again. But there are some good people in those organisations. And, you know, my heart goes out to them, actually.
So have I spoken about your best career experience?
All right.
What's the worst one?
Ooh. What's the worst one? Yeah, well, I probably would. I'm not sure I want to name it. Well, you probably could work it out. I did work for a company for about 14 months. I'd left TDG with a load of sort of self-belief and a few successful bits of business behind me. And in truth, I think I was an ops director at 28. So I was probably, on hindsight, I was probably overpromoted, really. Anyway, so I went to this business, and I still think I did some of the best business work I ever did, actually, and turned around part of that business. But I think that the reality of all that was I did it through sheer will and effort, and a lot of it was personal effort and grabbing and getting a few people behind me. And in the end, actually fell out with the then CEO of that business and left. I never felt comfortable about that because I didn't quite understand why. Why would fall out given this, what I saw was a tremendous financial turnaround, which I'm sure, well, it was, no question about it. But I think on reflection, as I got old, and that definitely damaged my confidence, actually, in myself. Without going into too much detail, it sort of suited me to leave for various reasons, but it still hurt my pride, you know? And it was only a couple of years later, 3 or 4 years later, actually, and I left and went back to a different part of TDG. But I sort of realised that you had to take more people with you. So much that it was my worst moment, it's possible, and it probably cost me 2 or 3 years in my career path, but it's probably the thing that made me stand back and go, hang on a minute, you've got to lead in a different way. And it's taken me this many years to get better and better, but it was always about, it's now about taking people with me on the journey and really trying to understand leadership better, my own leadership style more than anything else. So, I learned a phrase from one of my customers, actually, a few years ago, about 5 years ago. And she said to me, you know, we must never waste a good crisis.
That's very true. And look, thank you for sharing. I mean, I guess, you know, they say it's lonely at the top, and it can be. But to get to the top, it isn't necessarily, you know, a completely smooth path with no learning experience. There's no golden path out there. You know, we all have our learning experiences through that. And I think that should give hope to people that are looking and starting at their career that says, okay, there are going to be some lumps on bumps along the way, but to paraphrase Churchill, keep on beggaring on. You know, that's what you've got to do. Who's inspired you most in your career?
I think, I'm not sure it's in my career, actually, but I think the very first person that made me think I had something about me was actually a classics teacher, an old teacher, a guy called Andy Wood. And I'd probably only be, I don't know, 13, 14 at that time. I'd call him an unconventional teacher. But he had a great personality, natural style, but he was probably the brunt of many kids' cruel jibes, if you like. But he was a great lover of cricket, and he was an umpire for the Scottish cricket world, and also a teacher at my school. And it's cut a long story short, so I knew him outside of school as well as I did in school. And he made me the captain of the first 11 team when I was, I think, 13 or 14, probably because they had such a poor team. But I was having to suddenly captain kids who were 16 and 17 years of age. And for someone to believe that, and I wasn't that good. I definitely wasn't that good. But he obviously, well, he just put some faith into me that I didn't really have in myself, frankly. And when I left school, he wrote me a personal letter that, you know, and sadly I've lost it, but that, you know, basically telling me how he thought I developed and grew and what I was good at and what I wasn't good at. And that again inspired me to think, you know, I'm much better than that and than I thought. And, you know, even when I went to uni and struggled through some exams in mechanical engineering, I kept thinking about that. And it just got me through many tough times that other people believed in me. And I don't think I ever doubted myself too much, but he took me to a new level, and that was tremendously inspiring. So I take it back. I think it's back to a teacher. That it sounds a bit sort of, I don't know, twee, I suppose, is the word.
No, it's not, because it's genuine, and we all speak as we find. I mean, I had some fantastic teachers as I was going through my education, and on occasions they picked you up, dusted you down, and on other occasions they gave you the kick up the backside that you actually needed to be able to carry on and be your best. And it just speaks volumes in terms of why education is so damned important. And yeah, you know, I think that's great.
And it wasn't about results. It was about the person. Yeah. Didn't have to be the brightest.
So what are you most proud of?
Oh, my kids, really. That's always brilliant. The same. It's your kids, isn't it? And you know, I've got a 12-year-old and an 8-year-old, and they couldn't be more different from each other, a boy and a girl. And, you know, they're just talented in different ways. Yeah, they just make me smile all the time, frankly. So, yeah, but again, it's very important to get the balance, I suppose, with family and work. I'm very proud of what we're achieving in Great Bear, I've got to say. And, you know, that balance is important. But I think the thing that really gets me going is seeing, same with my kids, same in Great Bear, is seeing people develop as in themselves. And probably it's a bit twee. I get quite excited by seeing people achieve stuff that they didn't think they could, or I didn't think they maybe couldn't, and just create an environment where people can try to succeed in it, very much the way that Andy Wood did for me all those years back. And that's what I get very proud about and get excited about. And however you measure that, do you measure it through someone's career progression? Do you measure it through a depot performance? Do you measure it through just the person? Or do you measure, I don't know, there's lots of different measures, but they're probably very subjective, but you sort of know when people are doing well on many fronts, and that's what makes me proud.
I don't think it's twee at all, because in essence, whether or not you're at the top of an organization or at the, let's say, the starting point or the real sharp end of an organization, you know, it's about relatability and being human and appearing human is really important. So it's not in the least twee. It's showing you're a genuine human, which is great to see. Mm-hmm. So what do you wish you had known when you started your career?
Oh, what would I like to know if I started my career? Oh, well, it's back to that first point, really. I wish I'd known the value of teams as opposed to individual effort. I think that was the lesson I learned quickest, that you have to take people with you. You have to be a team player or the leader of that team, but you have to inspire team working to get the best out of individuals and a group and get the best result every day of the year. That's the most important thing. I don't think you can teach it. I think you just have to go through enough of those experiences where it's not quite worked, and you've got to be reflective enough to see that in order to develop going forward. I think maybe the only other thing is concentrate on getting good people with the right attitude. You don't need the best, brainiest people. You need good people with the right attitude, willing to learn, and who can fit that mold of working with others. In this industry I'm talking about, probably different if you're a brain scientist or a brain surgeon, rather, or a rocket scientist, I don't know, but not in this world that we operate in.
I always feel a good team will always beat even the most brilliant person.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that means that if you're a brilliant person, to surround yourself with a great team is going to cover all the blind spots that everybody has. So
yeah,
I certainly agree.
Yeah,
I mean, what's motivating your team right now?
I think it's growth. For us, it's the growth we're experiencing, the opportunities we're experiencing. I mean, Great Bear is, well, this year, next year, we will be three times the size By the middle of next year, we will, in turnover terms, be three times the size that the business was when I got it 5 years ago. And we haven't bought anyone in that. The
It's
business has
phenomenal.
bought stuff, but we have. And so people have had to adapt. We keep talking about behaviors. Our business is very entrepreneurial, but it's also very empowered. So I think that's what makes it a bit different. We're an empowered business where general management are key. Yeah, I think just wanting to keep doing the right thing and keep looking after our customers and keep looking after employees. I think that's really what's motivating people. They've been pretty challenging the last couple of years for this whole industry. I'm pretty impressed that we've managed to get through what we've done and achieve what we have achieved. So I think it's just doing the right thing for people, and they just want to help each other. It's as simple as that.
What are you finding within the industry most surprising at the moment?
Most surprising. I think COVID and labor shortages and all that sort of stuff, I think it shouldn't be a surprise, but it is a surprise that we're suddenly now quite important, Malcolm, in our industry. I don't remember us ever being quite so important. I think people realize that, I don't know, was it less than 3% distribution cost of sales or whatever that we typically represent, depending on which part of the supply chain they're analyzing. That I think people realize now that when that goes wrong, it really hurts businesses. And again, I think we're all aware that, it doesn't take that much to put a warehouse out of balance or a supply chain out of balance. And I think it's quite refreshing that people are having to rethink some of those things. So it's surprising to be important again, I suppose. Again, maybe it's the wrong word, but we're certainly more important. And I think the public now recognise as well that, the driver shortage and the exodus of Eastern European workforce has started to affect all of our lives. But I'm not sure how long that will last for with all the other things that are going on in the world at the moment. I suspect we'll go back to the pecking order. But I think it's pleasing that we are a bit more important than we used to be. I don't think we're as much of a commodity as we were perceived to be, and we certainly shouldn't be. We make a big difference in every part of everyone's world.
My view and my fascination with the industry, starting as a chemist, working as an industrial chemist, and then coming into supply chain and logistics from a relatively youthful age, I was fascinated by its complexity and what it achieves for people.
Yeah.
And people will talk about networks, but it's not. It's sort of like five-dimensional networks of networks. It's incredibly complex.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
the result of that is at the end of it, you get a happy customer. That they get
Yeah.
what they need when they want it most of the time.
Yeah.
That and overlying the challenges now in terms of how do we make that more sustainable, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I love solving problems. I really like the complexity behind it. That's what attracted me into the industry. What do you dream of in the future for the logistics industry? What do you think is coming?
Ooh, what do I think is coming? I think there's no doubt we're going to see more and more automation. The form of that automation, I think, will be interesting. I think there's only so many ASRS sheds that you can set up that will work in a common user environment. I don't think we're far from, I don't think there's that many more you could create that will work for the long term, for the 25-year term. I think we'll see more semi-automation to get the flexibility. I think we'll continue to see lots of automation in the fulfillment arenas. So yes, I think we're going to see more and more of that in the future. I do wonder what's going to happen with carbon, because obviously some of the stuff that the fulfillment type operation creates must be carbon disruptive. It doesn't sit easily with me. I sort of feel it's a bit like you on online retailing, online purchase feels like a dirty secret, a guilty secret, because you sort of know the damage that's being occurred, but we all do it.
I think it all comes from coordination, collaboration, and planning. You design it better. I mean, I often will look out my window, and I live in a fairly small development of houses, five houses, and I see 15, 16 more different delivery companies coming in. And the thought springs to my mind, and I know folks are looking at this now. How can we actually have, perhaps electrifying, have standard local delivery that we collaborate, we bring it into a town consolidation centre and then go out to it. So I think there are some fantastic ideas for the future that I know that parts of the industry are thinking about, and I think it's brilliant.
So again, I suppose that's the point. If you look at, just take Amazon as an example, if you look at what they've achieved, it was unthinkable 10 years ago, and it's amazing what they have done. And I suspect there's going to be more unthinkable occurring in the next 10 years as well that is along the themes that we've touched on, but probably deployed in very different ways.
I have a perverse thought, and I always felt that, I mean, Amazon, it's an incredible success, but it's just logistics with an e-com front end on it. And so you know, that to me sparks all sorts of thoughts of possibilities. And do I think the logistics industry is undervalued? Yes, vastly. So I think, you know, the industry itself has got to get out there and persuade. It's an exciting future for sure. So here's a different question for you. I'm going to sort of tweak the inner entrepreneur now. If you could start a business tomorrow, what business would it be?
You mean within the industry or?
Anything you want. You could be opening Alistair's afternoon tea shop for all I know.
I'd probably go into property because it's something. I think there's a really interesting parallel between that answer and what I've found in logistics. You do not have to be the brain of Britain to do a good job in this industry. You don't have to in property either, but good, sensible planning, good sort of foresight, good organisational skills, all those things with a decent brain, you can do a pretty good job and have a high chance of success. So I think that would probably be what I would do. And when I say property, I'm quite happy to run a building business, you know, because actually, again, go back to the logistics of organising the various trades, the various designs. You know, I still don't think it's not done well at all. And I cannot believe it couldn't be done better. And the type of skills that I've gained, I'm sure I could deploy in that type of environment, or anyone could deploy in that type of environment who has got similar values and beliefs as myself, you know, and aged 25 or 30, if I'd known that, I probably would have gone and done something like that. But I don't regret a single day of being in this industry. I think it's a fabulous industry, and I think it's got more to give over the next 25, 30 years. I'd encourage anyone to do it, actually. I really enjoy it, and it's great.
I'm going to be slightly cruel to you. We're coming to the end of the interview, so I'll go and push my luck a bit.
Go on.
So I'm going to ban one answer to this question because you've already given an answer to it. So what occupation other than your own would you like to try? And it's not a footballer.
That probably is what I just said. It's probably a building contractor.
Our free design pet and all that.
Just because you can use those skills, any opportunity to use the team building skills, the organisation skills, the tenacity, the resilience, all those things that you need to do well in our industry, they're the transferable skills. And, you know, frankly, being not bad with numbers through our training, you'd be the same. It doesn't have help. But I think that type of stuff would be things I would like to consider at some point. But I think the other thing is I just like to say, you know, as I come to the sort of back end of my career, I would want to give something back where I can at some point. I just think that's nice to do. But how I do that, who knows? Who knows?
Well, you might do it by answering some of these questions I'm going to ask you. So, do you think it's a good idea for people to consider the logistics and supply chain industry as a top three career choice? And if you do, why?
Definitely. Again, if I look at myself, I don't think the industry is covered in lots and lots of talent. I think there is a bit of a dearth of talent, and therefore, if you're pretty good, your competitive landscape is probably a bit easier than some of the other industries you could go into. It's an industry that pays pretty well for people who can work hard. You know, if I compare myself to what a lawyer earns or whatever, who are top-end academics, we don't do badly. You know, and again, I think there's a lot of job satisfaction as well. So if it's something you want to do and you've got the right credentials, give it a go.
And what advice would you give to someone just starting out? So, you know, how would somebody that's interested in a career, let's say with Great Bear Distribution or generally within logistics, how would they find out more?
I constantly come back to, if you're coming into logistics, go and do your time as an operator. Go and do 2 or 3 years as a first-line manager, a shift manager. Just accept that you're going to do something that you may feel at the outset, you might feel that you are too clever for, let me put it that way, but you're not, because that's where you learn about the process of managing people, the process of getting stuff through DCs. And, you know, and just as an aside, if I look around the industry, as a generalism, the best general managers I've seen of the big warehouses have all done a significant amount of time in stock and stock control, again, because it helps them understand the whole thing. So I think if you can get yourself a grounding in operations, it doesn't matter where you end up in this, whether you end up in commercial management or business development or even in, I don't know, quality or IT or whatever, if you understand the operation and the principles of those operations, you will always do well. And this, I do see people, particularly in the some of the, I have come across people in some of the bigger companies than ourselves who go through these graduate training programs, try to put people through lots of different departments in the way that an Excel would have done in the past, and they end up really not doing anything. They touch lots of departments, but never actually learning. And what they actually need to learn is the process, the pitfalls, but most of all, how to relate to people. The other thing I'd say as a student, work in a pub. I worked in a pub a few times, and when you have to throw out the odd tramp every morning without him getting too riled with you, age 18, 19, you learn. You just learn how to handle things.
So it's about, let's plumb some of the hidden depths that you can't, you know, that you can't see. It's about depth of detail. And it's about building your character as well. And to be fair, the logistics industry is full of wonderful characters. Yeah. Alistair, look, thank you so very much for giving up your time for this interview. It's really appreciated. And I hope you've enjoyed it.
Well, I have. Thank you very much, Malcolm. Sorry, I'm not more eloquent, but thank you for your time too.
More than eloquent enough. So thanks to everybody for listening. Do remember that the Logistics Collective is published on a variety of podcast platforms. If you like and follow us, you will receive an update as to when our next podcast will be produced. And I've got a list of about 7-8 more people to interview over the next few weeks. So I'm getting busy. Easier doing this. So thanks for listening. I will be speaking to you soon.
You can get in contact by email, podcast@logisticscollective.com, or leave a voice message on our website, logisticscollective.com. The podcast is a production by Loguru.